The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about almost 12 minutes past 10 o'clock, and our guest today in the studio is Jeff Jones. Today he is the Farm Bill Biologist. He has many hats, he tells me, in different titles, but today, Farm Bill Biologist. He's kind of emceeing, putting together a program concerning conservation type of issues in the thumb and programs available, and it's coming up soon, so thought we'd get Jeff on here and talk about the program that's coming up. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for letting me on again.
Yep, you were with us back in January, and it was a pheasant program you were talking about then. We're going to ask a little later in the show how that's going, but you have an event coming up a little later this month that you wanted to get the word out.
Right, April 23rd at the Farm Bureau Insurance Company from 6:30 to 8:30. It is basically programs that individuals can qualify for to reach their conservation goals. You know, different people have different objectives towards conservation, and I have five people come to talk that cover a wide variety of topics. The NRCS and FSA people are coming out to talk. There's an individual from the Fish and Wildlife Service coming to talk, and then the Huron Conservation District has an individual, and then the Michigan DNR representative is going to talk about some program, some financial assistance he has available.
Now, you work out at the Skola Conservation District office, correct?
Yes, sir.
But you cover the whole basic upper thumb area.
Right. I cover Huron, Sanilac, and Tuscola counties.
And the conservation programs that are coming out, are these that they're going to be talking of, are there new things that people need to know, or are some of these the best kept secrets in the upper thumb area?
Well, I hope a little bit of both, because, you know, the NRCS and FSA, you know, they administer CRP, EQIP, and stuff like that, their programs, and I think a lot of people know that.
And they also know things are changing in that, and they need to stay up with whatever's current on it.
Right, since we have the new Farm Bill, hopefully they can talk about, they're still hashing it out in Washington, the rules and everything, so
I'm still hashing everything out. Washington.
Well, that's
true.
We don't
need to go there, but well, I mean, but with the Farm Bill too, they're still figuring out what they actually passed and signed.
Exactly. So, not sure how much they can talk about. Maybe they can give us a little update on, you know, what they know, and they may not know more, no more than the general public knows. But hopefully, they might have a little insight.
And there may be some programs that weren't affected that are lesser known or not maybe utilized as much, so they can tell you about those too.
Right. They can give you just a basic of some of the programs they have that would benefit, you know, or help people work towards their conservation objectives. They cover a wide variety, you know, water quality issues, soil erosion, wildlife benefits. You know, they have programs that benefit quite a variety.
Most programs are designed to provide some sort of benefit, bang for your buck type of thing, so mm-hmm. that, you know, the programs that they initiate, you know, whether it's trying to prevent nutrients from leaching out of the field into the drains and out to the lakes, and it helps on both ends. It keeps stuff out of the lake that we really don't need there, building up more algae and giving us grief there, and it helps farmers by keeping the nutrients in their field where they need them.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And you've got other people coming now. Fish and Wildlife Service, they have programs? Maybe people don't know. Since they're federal, maybe there isn't as much talk about it?
Right. I don't know how many people know about the program. It's called the Partners Program that the Fish and Wildlife administers. And I'm not sure how many people over here knows about it. I haven't heard a lot of people mention it. So that's kind of one I wanted her to come talk, so maybe get the word out. She has a really good program. Basically, a lot of restoration work is what it is. It's benefiting wildlife. But, you know, as you said, you know, some of the programs benefit wildlife, helps water quality, soil erosion, like we've just talked about. But I think it would be great for her to come talk and get the word out over here, because she's in Shiawassee Wildlife Refuge, which is a good ways away. So,
And people, you know, have to almost look her up on the internet to find her phone number, because it's not going to be in your local phone book. So,
right,
unless you're aware of the program and it's available,
mm-hmm.
you may be missing out.
Right, exactly. And then the Huron Conservation District, Everybody knows them in the area, I'm sure, but still, they have some really good programs, some watershed grants that they administer that does a lot of really good things, conservation cover, and, you know, I don't really want to tell his talk, you know, right now, but he'll be like...
The whole point for us today is to just let people know what they're going to be talking about, so if it piques their interest or they have property that it might apply to, come on out.
Yeah, and he has, like I said, those watershed grants, and they cover, you know, filter strips, conservation cover, fence exclusion. The grants cover a wide variety of stuff that I think a lot of people would be interested in, you know, again, depending on what their objectives are on their property.
And they can tell you what kind of help they can give you, the length of commitment you might have to make to these types of programs, because it isn't a one-year deal. These things take time to establish themselves, and for the wildlife, if it's going to be for wildlife, to recognize it and return. So it's not a one-year deal, and if you don't like it, you're out. It's a little bit of a commitment, but you start off slow and you find out if it works.
Right, yep. And they can give you all that at the workshop.
And they can tell you other people in your area who are doing it and give you maybe contacts that can tell you, you know, yeah, we did this and it worked out fine here. And if you got something that's like this, it works in this, we might not be going back into it after the contract's up. But they can at least tell you what you have that might work.
Right. I'm sure they got some good examples and everything, like you're saying.
And places you can go visit and see how it works out.
Right.
And they'll tell you how much work it is for you to maintain, and if there's, you know, restrictions on, you know, whether you have to keep certain invasive things out or other times. You know, there's all kinds of things that, you know, come into play because it is a program designed to do a specific thing.
Mm-hmm. And then the last guy that we have is Mike Parker from the Michigan DNR. He has some grants that are basically creating grassland, big chunks of grassland. I don't know, you know, he has limits on it, but he can talk about that during the workshop. And not sure how many people know about it over here. Basically, the big push for this program has been me and just getting word of mouth out through my Pheasant Restoration Initiative program. So I really wanted him to come talk so people could really get what his program is about and kind of like what you're saying, what it, you know, basically the workings of it and how it works and everything and the restrictions. And so I think it's a good program for him too, and I think people would enjoy coming out and listening, you know, if they're interested in this, the conservation.
Something
side.
Maybe that's underutilized in the Thumb, where we've got so much of the property flat and tilled, and maybe there's places that you have that could be part of a program like this that would fit in quite well.
Right, yes.
Because we think of grasslands and we think of, you know, prairies, you know, bison and everything else running around, but grasslands, they have their own size requirements for, I'm sure, in the program for the DNR that... it might surprise you.
Right. He has size requirements, and I think they all, you know, Michelle and the Mike Parker both, I think they both have, you know, minimums and how it works. And it's almost on a case by case, I believe, because, you know, if you only have 20 acres surrounded by woods, I don't know how much he would be interested in it. But if you got 20 acres beside another 100 acres somebody in set aside, you know, that's something that might spark his interest. You know, it's kind of like on a case-by-case basis, but I'm sure he does have minimums on it and what he would really want to work at. But from what I found working with him, he does it kind of on a case-by-case, you know, what all is around and everything. So, you know, if somebody has a small tract, it's definitely worth a try to see what if he's interested in. You know, I don't want to turn anybody against anything because they do have a smaller tract, because, you know, it can tie into a big puzzle.
And what do the property owners basically get out of this? Are they just doing it because they're good stewards of the land and they've got land that these programs would apply to, or do some of them offer some sort of, I don't know, incentives or something?
Yeah, well, as far as FSA and NRCS, I really can't say there because, you know, like I said, we're still in the workings on that. But, you know, in the past, that's the way it's worked. They've gotten that rental payment. So
whether that continues or not, yeah, that's up to the language.
I really, right, I really don't want to comment on that right now, but maybe they can go into more detail at the workshop. I don't want to put.
They may have been getting, you know, feelings from their higher ups, you know, that this is kind of the way it's going. Don't promise people this or you can tell them this and just give you an idea on where things are going.
Right. And they would shoot straight with they would, you know, what they could say. But like I said, I don't really want to say because I don't know. I'm really not 100% sure on what the Conservation District program, how it pays and everything. That's another thing, you know. I know they do get rental payment. We can say that on some of the stuff. I think on all this stuff, actually. So as far as the other two, the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Michigan DNR, they do not get a rental payment, but they do pay the restoration cost.
So they upfront you how it's going, you know, the actual work costs to make it happen.
And that's something else. You know, they'll be able to talk about at the workshop and tell you how that works, how the payments work. But I do know that they don't get a yearly rental like a lot of people on CRP get. So,
but they will tell you how long the program is you're signed up for. They will tell you if once they make the restoration, whether you're responsible to keep it up or do they come back. You know, all these types of things. The questions a landowner would naturally have going into a program.
Right.
These are the people that can give you the skinny.
Right. Yeah, they can tell you the restrictions and everything, you know, what you can and can't do, which, and that was the whole, you know, a lot of times I spend a lot of time trying to translate between them and a landowner and, you know, I have so many of them and I know a lot about a lot of them, but I don't know everything. So I thought this would be great for, you know, people that are interested to come out and actually get it from the people that are administrating the grants, you know, get it from their mouth. And so,
well, the people who would actually sign you up,
right? Yeah, well, I can actually help out a lot on these, so,
but
you know,
in the final end it has to clear them,
it clears them, right? Yep. Fixes, because I'm really kind of the point of contact with the Michigan DNR and really the Fish and Wildlife Service also. You can call her, you know, look it up and call her, but you can also call me also, and I can give you some information and come out and talk to you and guide you from there.
Steer you in the direction you need to go to get everything you need to know to make a decision.
Exactly, yep.
Okay. And when again is this coming up?
It's April 23rd at 6:30 to 8:30. At the Farm Bureau Insurance, 711 North Van Dyke Road in Bad Axe.
That's the Farm Bureau Insurance Northgate Shopping Center behind McDonald's Food and Family Center uptown. Everybody knows where it's at.
Okay.
They hold a lot of events up there because they have that big meeting room that facilitates this.
Yeah, that's what that was recommended. That was a great place, and since everybody does know it, so.
Okay, and there's no cost.
No cost, no.
You don't need to pre-register. There's no materials or anything. You got to make sure you have enough to pass around or anything like that. So
just show up.
Just show up and find out all these programs. Is this the time to think about it? Do most of these programs kick in a fiscal year? Is this something you might want to, you know, it might not kick in this year. Their programs may be set, but, you know, for after October 1st, you get into the next fiscal year, and sometimes then you're eligible again. So this may be a good time to check it out before the whole summer growing season and everything's going crazy around your place to try and see if maybe these programs are a fit for you.
Right. I was trying to time it where, you know, I could catch people before they started planting everything and get tied up on all that.
Well, the way it's been going this year, you could have chosen July, I think. But
let's hope not. I know people want to get out in the field. So, and then we're having it in the evening, so, you know, people have some free time, hopefully have some free time. And so we're trying to accommodate, you know, everybody we can.
And there will be time for questions and answers, so because you have the experts in front of you with the programs, it's always a good time to be able to. Because sometimes there's just a point or a particular thing you've got, and they can answer it for you, or at least steer you in the right way.
Right, exactly. You know, or we can, you know, give out phone numbers, talk to people later, or give me a call or whatever.
And it's a great resource we have up here. And I know farmers are great stewards of the land. They want to conserve because it ends up helping them as well in the long term, whether it's keeping their own soil on their own property and not sending it to the neighbors or friendly Canadians across the lake, or whether keeping all your nutrients on your farm and sending it out to grow algae in the bay.
Exactly. So we'll see. I think it'd be interesting because I think a lot of people don't realize about a few of the programs. So.
Okay. Well, then we'll come back to that at the end, and we'll give them again the shot of when it's going to happen.
Okay.
Right now, how's your pheasant restoration project going? You were working on that. You came here in January.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if a lot of people were thinking pheasants in January. They were still probably eating the turkey from Thanksgiving yet.
Right.
But you were in here and you were talking about the program. What is the pheasant restoration program you're working on here in the area?
Well, basically, it's just it ties in with some of these grassland projects also. I mean, not directly, but, you know, I mean, creating pheasant habitat, grassland habitat, you know. It's the Pheasant Restoration Initiative is all that, and working with landowners to create these co-ops, which also ties to habitat and creation. I know I mentioned the co-ops when I was on here last, and since then, I've added a new one down on the Sanilac-Lapeer line. Some people down there formed a co-op. And the co-op that I have over in Mabel is going great. I mean, these people, we have like 20 people that have come to the meetings, and they're really interested in doing pheasant habitat work, enhancing their habitat, creating new habitat. We're setting up some crowing survey routes through the co-op to kind of get a number of how many pheasants we hear, so we can do it year after year and see if our efforts are paying off, you know, if we're hearing more pheasants in following years. So it's going really well there, and I have a lot of people interested in informing some co-ops, just trying to tie it together now. So,
and these people need to be somewhat geographically close, somewhat just willing to work together, or how does the co-op part of it go? It would seem to me that if you're going to make an effort, you'd want it in somewhat of a contained or defined area so that all of you are working together and it's your properties and you're all on the same page doing it, as opposed to having one here, one in Sebring, one in Port Austin, and the pheasants don't know where to go.
Right. Well, as far the co-op is like a 10,000 acre block is what they define the co-op.
And by 10,000 acres, are we talking wild acreage, or are we just talking acreage total and then finding places on that property where you can create some habitat to help the pheasants? Because I know farmland prices we have around here, nobody's going to take a field and you know, do nothing with it, because there's money to be made off of it, and that's what they're in business for. That's mm-hmm. their livelihood. But there's a lot of pieces along the sides and other places on the property that may have a jagged edge or something to it that might be prime for this.
Well, a lot of, as you mentioned, little jagged edge, a lot of filter strips, you know. A lot of farmers have filter strips, and you know, we're love to have that in the co-ops, you know. I mean, the filter strips a lot of times connect each other. Connect this filter strip will go to this block that'll go to another, you know, filter strip across the street. And
a lot of the filter strips are near the ditch,
mm-hmm.
because that's kind of the purpose of it.
Right.
Which kind of puts the birds at the roadside, which seems to be kind of a, I don't know. I think they get hit an awful lot that way. Do you try to see if you can get more land along maybe a creek that's jagged through your field, and you straighten it out with some habitat in there? Are some of these other areas that you're looking at?
Well, a lot of the ditches, you know, through the fields do have filter strips on them also. So, yeah, but yes, you know, if somebody's interested in putting a filter strip, this workshop would be a good one to come to get some information on putting some filter strips in. But yes, that would be nice to have them away from the road, but
because they're nice to see when you drive, but you always figure they're darting around and grief. How long are they going to last? Only the smart ones survive, and the dumb ones seem to end up on the road.
Right.
Our pheasant numbers, do we really have any left? I mean, you see a few once in a while, but I remember years past, they were everywhere.
Now, I don't think they're to that
but, I mean,
point.
You know, you, but you would see them almost like you'd see turkeys out in the field at certain times of the year. I mean, they're around. I don't see many pheasant anymore. I mean, even around the ditches, there's, I don't know if it's because now with the DDT not being used anymore, we got more of our predators back. You see hawks now that I never used to see,
mm-hmm.
and other birds of prey. So I don't know if, you know, we helped them, and now what we're trying to help with the pheasants are, you know, they're getting eaten. So maybe it's, we got to find that balance again that we had long ago.
It depends on who you talk to, really, as far as how many pheasants. I mean, you know, I talk to people that see 30 and 40 pheasants in their field. You know, commonly see 30 and 40 pheasants. Then I talk to people that have, you know, 100 acres in CRP that say they never see a pheasant. So it really depends on who you talk to. I mean, I have people that consistently, I know a guy down near Mabel that says he can hear five or six roosters crowing right now. You know,
well, it is so, season.
Yeah, I mean, he says I hear them all over the place, but like I said, it kind of depends on where you're at. And I'm hearing a lot of people that are seeing pheasants, though.
But you're looking more to find a natural balance. We used to do a lot of, you know, raising chicks and sending them out there, and they just ended up being like the stocking of fish, and they're just feeding the bigger ones and other things down the line. You're looking to find a habitat where they can naturally sustain their own numbers.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's the goal, is to try to create enough of that, you know, where they
can. Not trying to turn the Tri-County area into a big shooting ranch where you stock a bunch of birds and the hunters come in and next year we got to stock another bunch of birds because they're all gone.
Right. I mean, this is all pretty much habitat driven, you know, creating, enhancing, you know, because there is a lot of fields that, at least down in southern Tuscola, that aren't farmed, they are grown up, they could be made in some really good pheasant habitat, you know, with some brush removal and some herbicide treatments, and then planting some good prairie grasses. Then that's one thing that the Michigan DNR money, his money is really earmarked for. You know, I see some around other places, you know, I'm always on the lookout for it. And
maybe that's why these people see it, is that they're looking for them and the rest of us are only spot them when they're right in front of our face.
So. But,
yeah, and hopefully we can get them back. It used to be a, you know, pheasant season used to be a big thing around here, and everybody'd come back with a few birds in their backpack and away they go, and you don't hear about it quite as much anymore, and I don't know if those DDT and all that stuff did a number on them too, because as I understood it, it played heck on the eggs of most bird species that got it in their system, and get them back and see what happens.
Yeah, well, we're trying, and I mean, in other words, also, you know, a lot of this grass that I'm mentioning benefits a lot of wildlife. I mean, deer love to bed down in, you know, switchgrass fields. Switchgrass can get 4 to 6 foot tall, and the deer love it. The biggest deer I have seen in Michigan was in a switchgrass, was in a field. It wasn't switchgrass, but it was in a field, and they love to bed down. So, you know, we're not just, you know, not all, we're also benefiting other wildlife. Turkeys will bed nest in it. Songbirds, of course, nest in it. And but, you know, a lot of people that want to hold the deer, the big ducks on their property, can plant some plots of switchgrass and do a whole lot of good by keeping them on their property because they really like to bed down in it.
Yeah, put it at the back, not by the road.
Right, exactly.
In the back, because I don't want to hit the big ones because I always seem to. But does the pheasant habitat help other birds that we used to hunt around here? There used to be grouse and other things that people would go out for. Is this kind of a common thing that they all kind of need the same thing, or is every species a little different in what they want?
Well, the grouse is more of an early successional woodland species, so, you know, not the grouse wouldn't really benefit from the grass, no. But, you know, like I said, the turkeys will nest in it, so.
Are pheasants difficult to repopulate? I mean, do they only have one brood a year, and if it's lost, it's lost? I mean, there's some species that are very prolific, and there are others that are kind of rigidly timed, and you just don't sit there and, you know, think, you know, you can have two mice, and in a year you got a whole house full of them. But, you know, some species, especially wild, where they're connected to the seasons and such, you maybe get one, two broods, and that's it for a season.
Well, the pheasants will only have one brood that they you know, if they pull off a breed.
So they got one shot.
But, well, now they will and if their nest fails, they will re-nest multiple times. I mean, I think they'll re-nest up to five times. The downside of that is that the egg number, the clutch size, gets smaller each time they re-nest. So, you know, she might lay 8 eggs the first time, and if she loses that nest, she might only lay 6 eggs. So, you know, every time she tries to nest, she lays less eggs. So, you know.
And the idea of the strips and the other things of the habitat you're trying to create is to keep them from trying to nest in the middle of a field where, you know, 20-ton tractor is going to, and its implements are going to be driving over them all the time. It's not the way you want to raise your chicks.
Right, right.
And so if you give them a place, they'll gravitate toward it, and they have a little safer, a little more cover, keep predators out, and all the other types of things that cut down on the survival rate of the birds.
Yeah, because you can imagine, you know, if you've got a 100-acre field and you're nesting out in it, it's a lot harder to find you in the 100-acre field than if it's a 1-acre field, you know. I mean, smaller is easier for the predators to find, but it is better than the field, as you said.
But if you've got cover and they can't see you, either from overhead or wherever, you're a little better off than if you're stuck out in the open somewhere.
Definitely, definitely. And that's a big thing. The overhead cover is really what prevents the avian predators from spotting the pheasants. When you got a really thick cover that they can get down underneath, the avian predators can't see them from the air.
Until them birds can fly, the chicks are very vulnerable. They can't go that far, they can't go that fast, and right. If they're spotted, goodbye.
Yep.
Okay. Well, how do people get involved in the pheasant thing? Do they contact you, or do they get together with a couple of neighbors, say, I think this is a good idea, let's get the program going and talk to you then, or do you facilitate getting people together?
They can do either way. I mean, that's kind of what the one down on the Tuscola Lapeer line did. They kind of, a couple of them got together and decided they wanted to do it and then contacted me. And you can contact me and I can give you assistance to going forward with it.
What kind of assistance do you give them? Do you give them recommendations on how maybe they might want to proceed? Or do you show them, you know, what's out there, or some of these other programs that might help, the filter strips and all those other things that there might be a little other benefits to it other than the good work they want to do and keeping the pheasants going?
Well, of course, tell them about the programs. The one thing I have really learned here is that in dealing with these co-ops is word of mouth is just unbelievable. What you're asking here, you know, if I have somebody call me up, you know, I can usually find somebody in the area that, because I know a lot of people, Pheasants Forever and everything, I usually can find somebody that knows somebody in that area additional and then touch base with that person. Well, that person always knows somebody, you know. I mean, it's just been a domino effect a lot of times. So,
and that means you don't have to carry the full balance of the amount of land needed to make a cooperative functional. You got everybody else in your group.
Exactly. Yep.
Contributing a little bit to the cumulative effort.
And that's the whole point of it. I mean, they're wanting a goal to 1,200 to 1,500 acres of habitat within this 10,000 acre block. And, you know, we got to it really quick down there in Mayville. It didn't take hardly any time. We started out, I don't know, 300 or 400 acres, I think. And we're up to probably 2,000 acres now.
So it'll surprise people how fast that total can grow.
I think it will. Mm-hmm.
Other people wanting to join in.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because that's kind of the way this one down on the Lapeer line's going. You know, there was two of them, and it actually, I called this DNR guy and was telling him about this one, and he told me a name. And so, you know, I called them up and told them, hey, call so-and-so. And, you know, and then that person's going to know somebody. So, yeah, I mean, it has actually surprised me at how it goes. But, you know.
And people with their land, they're very possessive of it. These programs still, for the most part, give you control over your own property, who's on it, all that type of stuff. You're not opening your land up to pheasant hunting for the general population. It's still your land.
Right. As far as the Fish and Wildlife and the DNR, yes. Yes. You know.
Because, you know, people, they want to build it up and they want to be able to enjoy it too. And, you know, they don't want, you know, 700 people coming up from Motor City shooting out all the birds and going home and he did all the work and he goes out there and he can't find a thing.
Right. As far as I know, none of these programs open it up to hunting, you know. So, and because that's the biggest question I get is, okay, do I have to open it up to hunting? No.
And that's a big one. That's a big question for a property owner.
It would be for me.
Of their own property. Because not only that, it brings along liability and everything else if you have all other people on there. At least when they're invited, you know who's on there and... You got a reasonable assumption they know what they're doing.
Like I said, that would be one of the first things that come out of my mouth if I was a landowner. I could definitely understand that. I mean, as you said, liability. Everybody wants to sue nowadays, so.
And it just makes common sense.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So again, your program's coming up April 23rd. That's like next week already. This is not too long away.
Next Wednesday,
Farm Bureau Building in Bad Axe, mm-hmm. the insurance office. Northgate Shopping Center behind Food and Family Center. Starts at 6:30. About a 2-hour program.
Roughly,
yeah. Give you a chance to talk, and there will be a time for questions, and I'm sure afterwards you can take somebody aside and say, you know, what about this? So there's a lot of information to be had, a lot of programs out there you may not know of, and a good central place to learn what there is in the area to maybe help you out.
Yep. And if anybody's got any questions between now and then, you can feel free to call me at 989-673-8174, extension 3.
I'm pretty sure they can call that number as well if they want to get in the pheasant cooperative.
Exactly. Or any questions like that. Any wildlife pheasant questions, feel free to call me.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Thank everybody.
Hope you get a good turnout.
Thank you.
Our guest today on the program has been Jeff Jones with the Tuscola Conservation District Office, today wearing the Farm Bill Biologist hat. He does have the program coming up next Wednesday, April 23rd, 6:30 till 8:30 p.m. at the Farm Bureau Insurance Building. It's all about conservation programs and goals available in the area, how you can meet them, and what is out there you may not know of. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.